I want to start this episode with an open-ended question. There's not a right or wrong answer, but I'm kind of wondering what this means to you. So the question is, what does it mean to be heard? Because one of the top complaints in education right now is that teachers don't feel like their voices are heard. That maybe principals don't hear our voices, that maybe the school board isn't interested in hearing our voices, that the media or maybe the government is certainly not hearing our voices. And I think this can create a lot of stress and frustration in education. But I also have the backs of principals and school board members and committees because I think that if we want to actually be heard, we have to give ourselves the time and space to make our voices loud and proud. We have to be willing to sit down and have the hard conversations. Because I think sometimes in education, we just complain about things, but we don't combat the issue. So therefore, things never change, and it just creates this really vicious negative cycle. Do you know what's interesting about this question of what does it mean to actually be heard? Do you know who else sometimes feels like they're not heard in schools? Our students. In fact, an activity that I recently did with my students was ask them that. What does it mean to be heard? And if you knew that teachers were listening, if you knew that whatever you said was going to be received, was going to be heard, and was going to hopefully have some action behind it, what would you say to teachers? In a respectful and an engaging way, what would you say if you knew that the ears of teachers were open? What would you say to principals if you knew that there was a time and a space in a judgment-free zone for them to actively hear you? That's actually what we're going to dive into in this episode because the responses of my students absolutely blew me away. And I think that the structure of this sentence, what would you say to teachers if you knew they were listening? The structure of that could make a really big impact with your students and this school year. Now, before we get into the episode, I want to read a 5-star review that was left on the Apple Podcast app. The listener of the week is Lola3333, and Lola said, 5 stars, amazing resource for teachers. Lola wrote, Monica teaches us about relevant topics and shares very relatable stories. I love the guests that she brings on the show and when she asks for teacher input during the podcast episodes as well. It's so helpful that Miss Genta is a classroom teacher also because it's ever changing each year. She replies to your questions and she interacts with her followers, heart emoji. Lola 3333, thank you so much for being the listener of the week. And you're right, replying to you guys, answering your direct messages, emailing you back, that's a really important thing for me because this podcast is not about these episodes. This podcast is a platform to create great conversations and great connections with you guys as fellow teachers. I love being a classroom teacher alongside you, and I love being able to be a teacher who is hopefully helping you guys to engage in better conversations, better activities, and create a better teacher life. If you haven't left a written review yet, will you take just a couple of seconds to do that so even more teachers can find this podcast and so we can connect? I promise a written review on your podcast platform will take less than 15 seconds and will create a positive ripple effect in the teacher community. If you are ready for an engaging episode on a very simple question followed by a very simple conversation that I think is going to help you level up your teacher life, then you're in the right place. Let's get into it. There is awesome in every single school day. So here is the big question. How can teachers like us, who love our job, love our students, and love being a part of education, celebrate awesome even more in our classrooms and learning communities? Where can we find teaching tips and tricks?
Where can we find engaging stories and motivational strategies? That is the question, and this weekly podcast is your answer. So welcome to all my teacher friends. My name is Monica Genta, and I am so excited that you are here listening to this podcast, This Teacher Life. Have you ever heard the figure of speech in life that says, don't ask questions that you don't want the real answers to? I think that's a hard question to marinate on because as humans, and especially as teachers, we want to constantly be learning and constantly be growing. But sometimes when we ask questions and we don't like the answer, we're like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, I'm going to pretend like I didn't hear that. Yeah, that's actually not true. And sometimes we don't even believe the actual answer. Well, recently, I asked students of mine a question, knowing that their responses could irritate me, knowing that their answers, their opinions, their thoughts could frustrate me, but I want to build relationships with them. And I believe that it's never too early and it's never too late to build really strong relationships with kids. So this point in the school year is a perfect time in the school year to dive into some hard questions, to build relationships, and also create the roadmap of this school year. So I recently asked my students, if you knew that teachers were listening, if you knew that you could openly and freely say something to your teachers, but you had to do it in a respectful way, you had to do it in a meaningful, appropriate way, but we would hear you, we would receive it, what would you say to teachers? And I actually turned this into an activity because I knew that if I just threw that question out, it could get a little volatile, it could get a little disjointed. So I handed every single one of my students a note card. And I wrote the question prompt up on the board, which was, if you knew teachers were listening, what would you say? What would you ask them to do? What would you ask them to consider? What do you need from teachers this year? I then collected those note cards after giving them some time and space to just write something down. Kids said, do we have to put our names on them? And I said, no, it's completely optional. If you want to put your name on it, you can. If you don't feel comfortable doing that, that's okay. But I will say this, we are going to talk about these and have a classroom conversation. So I then collected the note cards. And I want to be very real. There were some note cards that said, what I want my teachers to know is that we should have more time on our cell phones. Like we should be able to Snapchat in class. Did that frustrate me? No. I'm not going to give you your cell phone. We as a school are not going to allow you to Snapchat in class. But did I read it? Yes. Did I receive it? Yes. Did I actually say to kids, listen, that note card doesn't surprise me. I get it. I get it from your standpoint. You're a group of teenagers. Of course you want your cell phone. Of course you want Snapchat. Thank you for writing that down. Thank you for being honest. But that one is going to be hard to sway us as teachers to change our mind on. But thank you. And so at least I acknowledged it. I didn't tear it up and throw it in the trash can and be like, that's a dumb idea. Why would anyone write that down? No, I acknowledged it. Because remember, the goal of this is to be heard. If we want kids to openly and actively communicate with us throughout the school year, just simply giving them the time and the space to be heard is absolutely a monumental step in that trust and relationship development process. So of course, I got note cards about Snapchat. Of course, I got note cards about like, never give us any homework. Let us sleep in class. I want teachers to know that school is stupid and that we should just have to never come. Okay, I hear you. I read it. I get from your standpoint why you would write that down. But once we got through some of those kind of like, I guess, predictable things, this is where some really great nitty-gritty conversation started to happen. For example, one student wrote down, be more understanding. That's all that was on the note card. It literally said, be more understanding. And so that felt very open-ended.
because there weren't many details. And that was okay with me because this is a great catalyst for conversation. So I didn't call the kid out who wrote it down. This student did write their name on the back of the note card, but I said, you know, it really doesn't matter who wrote that down. What do you guys think that that means? Because when I saw be more understanding, I thought that meant like if you're late for class, that would make sense to me. Be more understanding if I don't have a pencil. Be more understanding if my Chromebook's not fully charged. That would have made sense to me. But that's actually not what the kids were really, truly talking about. We had an amazing conversation of kids want us to be more understanding. And really what it was about was proof of learning. I said, tell me more. They're like, for example, in math, I want you to be more understanding. I want the math teacher to be more understanding. I don't teach math. But they're like, in the past, we can have the exact correct work. We can have the exact correct answer. We can have the labels. But the way that we got the answer and the way that the teacher said we should get the answer were not the same thing, so we got points off. I'm not cheating on one of the apps and doing like photo math. I'm not having my parents do my homework. I'm literally showing the work, but because it wasn't in the exact same structure that they wanted it, or because I didn't use the type of paper that the teacher wanted, or because I put my name in the top left-hand corner instead of the top right-hand corner, I didn't get credit. Like, why do teachers care? If I'm getting the work done, why do you care? And I think that's so true and so valid. When was the last time that we heard something like that from a student and we as educators took a step back and thought, yeah, does it actually matter if we write names on the left-hand side of the paper or the right-hand side of the paper? Like, we live in a world where there are literally still teachers taking points off of assignments for having names in the wrong spot. What? I get why kids are frustrated about stuff like that. I've got another kid who said, be more understanding is like proof of learning. I shouldn't get a zero on an assignment if there were 10 questions and I did 3 of 10. And the 3 of 10 that I did correctly, I don't get credit for. Why did I get a zero? And the teacher says, well, because it's incomplete. And I'm like, yes, the student is saying, yes, but I got 3 out of 10 done and I got 3 out of 10 right. And they're like, that's so frustrating when the teacher's like, well, it's a zero because it's incomplete. I only grade complete work. Like, I understand why kids are frustrated by that. And so we have to ask ourselves, are we creating a space where as long as we have proof of learning that we as teachers can be more understanding? These are just two examples that the kids threw out, like names on paper and like incomplete work should not be a zero. Like, grade the work that the kid has. I'm sure there are a million little examples that exist in your classroom. But if a kid is saying, listen to us, please, 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 can we just like be more understanding of some things like this? I think that's a fair thing. Now, one note card that I didn't really want to get into, but I let the conversation flow for a little bit, was a student said, let us eat in class. And the whole class was like, yes, seriously. Even if we can't have Snapchat, even if we have to come to school, even if like all of these things that like kids obviously want, like even if we can't wear hats in the classroom or hoods in the classroom, can we eat in class? And I said, here's the thing. This doesn't really bother me a great deal. We do have a school policy that there's no like food in the classroom. And I think why we have that as a school policy is because we are teaching in the middle of a cornfield and we get all kinds of bugs and mice and rats and rodents, literally because we are in the middle of a field. So I get it. But I can also see why they're saying like, why can't we just have snacks? And I said, let me tell you about it from my standpoint, is when I taught at a previous school district, we didn't allow food in the classroom because what happened was we said kids could have a small snack, but that small snack went from like a Ziploc bag of Cheetos to like a full size bag of Cheetos to like a family party size bag of Cheetos to
a kid bringing in a box of Cheetos with 24 individually wrapped bags of Cheetos and then they hand it out. You know what I'm talking about. As teachers, this shit can spiral quick. We give kids just a little bit of wiggle room and by the end of it, you're like, that's not even close to the original rule at all. And then what ends up happening, it ruins the rule for everyone. Our expectations have literally just been blown out the window and we're like, no, we can no longer do that because this is what's happened. It's the same thing. Like, can you have water? Yes. Can you have water in a Stanley? Sure. Can we have Gatorade in a Stanley? I guess so. Then I'm going to bring a jug of Gatorade. Well, if they're having a jug of Gatorade, why can't I have my Starbucks? And then it turns into this like, whoa, it went from water to a vanilla bean frappuccino size extra grande in the matter of seconds. And we're like, what? Why did this spiral? So, kid said, let us eat in class. And I said, well, then what would be the reasonable definition of eating in class? And the kid said, if you were bringing in cookies, 3 Oreo-sized cookies, that's fine for a snack. And I said, okay, what about like these people eating chips? They're like, a sandwich size Ziploc bag of chips. They're like, Miss Jenna, we'll create definitions. We can create posters. We can create like something for the announcement boards. Like, we can make it specific. If we can make it specific, would you consider having snacks in the classroom again? And I'm like, listen, you guys, you know how I'm sitting here listening to you because you're being reasonable and we're having a conductive, productive conversation? I think principals want to have these same kinds of conversations with students. Principals want to have these like literally amazing conversations with teaching staff as well. I said, do I think that you could present this exact same thing to our building leaders and they might hear you? Yeah. And so something that I thought was going to derail quickly ended up being a great conversation. Another student was talking about sports and grades. And they're like, you know what? Student athletes, we totally get ripped off. And I'm like, tell me more. Because I don't think you get ripped off because we let you at this school and most schools in our state, we allow you to play the sport as long as you have a report card full of D's. I said, I think in my opinion, from my perspective, that's a pretty low standard. And the kid said, no, that's fine. Like, we understand that we should be getting better grades than D's, but they said sometimes teachers trap us. And I was like, ooh, that's a bold statement. You're going to need to explain yourself. And they're like, so eligibility for sports is run on a Thursday at 3 p.m. But what happens is sometimes we will turn an assignment in at 2:50 p.m. on a Thursday, because that's when it's due, and the teacher will grade it really quickly. And that one assignment in 10 minutes will take us from passing the class to not passing the class. And so out of nowhere, one bad assignment totally derails us, and we can't play sports for an entire week, but we never really had any time to make it better. They said, what if it was this like 3 days where If it's graded within 3 days of the eligibility report, you can put it on the eligibility report. They're like, speaking of which, and this created a whole spiral. They're like, speaking of which, I think 3 days is an appropriate amount of time for teachers to actually grade work. They're like, I've got a teacher who hasn't graded something that I turned in 8 days ago. And I said, was it turned in on time? And they're like, no. And I said, no, that's not fair. If you're not turning an assignment in on time, I think the teacher gets a little bit more wiggle room. And they're like, okay, you're right. That's fair. So the kids were like, so maybe we could create a policy where teachers have to turn in eligibility 3 days in advance. So then we can have a chance before we're ineligible for an entire week. And maybe we could have a policy where teachers have to grade things within 3 days. And I said, now, what about if it's a big project or a big paper? And they're like, that's a good point. Projects and big papers should definitely give more time. We get that. And so all of a sudden, these kids were having just
completely appropriate viewpoints. Like, we were meeting in the middle and the kids are like, yeah, that's totally fair. We got to be fair to teachers. Guys, they're trying hard. They got a ton of papers to grade. Like, if a teacher assigns something and they collect it from every single student, sometimes that means they're grading 50 to 100 papers in one night. That's not fair. They've got families. And what I noticed was, this wasn't a hostile conversation. This wasn't a teachers are crappy and you guys just hate us. It was, can we just hear each other? And can, like, we meet in the middle on some of this stuff? Of course, kids were cheering for no homework. Give us no homework. Give us no homework. And then I said, you guys, I don't know if that's reasonable, because I think that most teachers don't give tons of homework. I think what happens is you guys waste a lot of class time. And so it feels like you have a lot of homework because you don't use class time wisely. And the kids were like, straight up, it's true. It's true. And I said, here's my viewpoint on it. Let me know what you guys think about this. I said, outside of my class, and I'm just teaching one of your 7 classes a day, I don't think that you should have more than 10 minutes worth of homework per class of homework per night. So even if you had homework in every single class, that would mean that you only really have 60 minutes of additional homework outside of the school day. So if the school day gets done at 3, you could be done with homework by 4. If you have practice from 3 to 5, you could be done with homework by 6, leaving you time for friends, for family, for entertainment, for your dang cell phones, all of the things. But that is only if you guys are using your class time wisely. And they're like, that's so fair. That would be so fair. I could give examples for days of how this conversation went. But as you can see, there was so much power behind the purpose of the question. The question being, hey, if you knew teachers were listening, what would you say to them? And how can we have a fair, productive, proactive conversation about what fair means and what actually listening to each other means, so we can use that for the rest of the school year? We can just create this is what active listening and appropriate communication looks like. And I'm not going to be able to say yes to all of your requests. I'm not going to think all of your ideas are great, and I'm not going to implement all of them. But I want you to hear me out on why. I want to get your feedback on why you want that. And can we maybe meet in the middle? Can I maybe go all the way on some of the things that you want and say absolutely not on some of the things, but can, like, we create a class average, if you will, where we might not get exactly what we want in every single situation, but we can at least hear each other and rationalize the why? These are great conversations to have with students, but these are also great conversations to have as a staff. When was the last time your staff got on the same page like this? Because I think sometimes principals roll out new paperwork. Principals roll out new proactive plans, and we're like, that's shit. I'm not doing that. That's not what's best. The other plan worked fine. Why do we have to do this? This is some BS. This is a time vampire. This is an energy vampire. And we don't even listen to the principal. We don't even listen to the parent. I think when we present ideas, we're not going to always get what we want, but we can at least hear the other person. We can at least acknowledge, like, I hear you and I get what you're saying. And I get why you're frustrated. And I get why you would want that. And I get why you think that's a good idea. But can we hear each other in this and figure out maybe a little bit better of a plan? Can we tweak some of these details so that we can kind of feel like we're all on a team? It was really interesting because the last thing that I talked about with my students was, they're like, our class schedule is so stupid. And I'm like, whoa, why do you think your class schedule is so stupid? And they're like, because so many of our classes are so dumb. And I'm like, I need to hear more about that. And the student said, it just gets to a point where it's like, do I really need that much math? Do I really need to sit down with a sentence, encircle the verb, and underline the noun, and triple underline the coordinating conjunction. They're like, Vicente, when was the last time you did that in your real life? And I'm like, here's the thing. If a student is saying, when was the last time you did that in your real life, and you can't answer it, they might be on to something. And an answer like, well, because that's just how it is a crappy response. Like, our kids in this generation are smarter than to be like, well, that's just how it is. I don't write the rules, I just follow them. Like, these are responses that just frustrate the heck out of kids. So instead of being like, guys, get over it, you're going to have to take algebra too, and that's just the way it is, I said, okay, so what's the perfect schedule then? Like, what classes do you think that every single kid needs? And here's what they came up with. Literally, they said, here are the four classes. And remind you, I don't necessarily agree with this, but this is what a group of middle school kids said. They said, we do need math. We do. Now, we don't need some of the math that we're taking, but like, we should be able to add, multiply, divide. Basically, they were saying like statistics. Like, a statistics class could be important, so math. Number three, they said woodworking. They think that all kids should take woodworking because they're like, do you know how expensive furniture is? If we knew how to make our own furniture and had some basic handyman skills or handy woman skills, handy person skills, then that would be so very positive in our real life. And I'm like, okay. Next one, they said family and consumer sciences. Like, basically an opportunity for advisory or social emotional learning, or like, they're like, we like doing our taxes and doing laundry. And kids are like, I don't know how to do laundry. And some kids are like, you've never done laundry. And it created this whole thing. So kids want to learn some like real life skills that pertain to them regardless of their college or career choice. And finally, this is so interesting, the number one class that every single kid said we should have to take that is a business class. Because they said, Ms. Gentle, you keep saying this, and we think it's true, and I actually, according to research, this is true, that the number one job for our current generation of kids, the number one job in the world for the current generation of kids is going to be entrepreneur. Now, that's an overarching term for like, people are going to own plumbing businesses. People are going to own food businesses. People are going to own consulting businesses. People are going to own businesses of tons of different skill sets, of tons of different interest areas and strength areas. But like, we're going to live in basically like a freelance society. And we can think that's a good thing or a bad thing. But the reality is like, working as your own boss is on the rise. And kids are like, we understand that. We see that. Social media is helping us do that. We think that a required business class starting at a young age would be really important. And like, how do you argue with that? Like, these kids should be on like the United States Department of Education, right? Like, these kids and these ideas, they should be school board members. We should have kids on a committee talking about these things so that their voices can be heard. We got to empower our kids. And even if you're like, my God, Monica, you're taking it too far. You want these kids to be working for the United States Department of Education? No. But what I'm saying is, can we have these conversations in our classrooms? Can we start there? Can you have this conversation with students right now? I'm like, what do you need this year? What are your thoughts? This is an open space, and I want to hear you out. Now, you might be thinking, when did you have this conversation, Monica? Like, when would a conversation like this even happen? I think this can happen in your content area classes. I think this can happen at the beginning of the school day, at the end of the school day, in the middle of school day. I think this can happen in any environment. What do I think is the best fit for this kind of conversation? I did it during my SEL time, my advisory time with my students. Your school might call it morning meeting, advisory, homeroom, social emotional learning. Like, there's lots of different words or phrases or kind of like, you know, catchy little things. Like, maybe your mascot is the wildcat, so you call it like din time. I don't care what you call it. Din time, win time, it's life time, okay? And I'm not talking about the Lifetime Movie Network. I'm talking about time to do life with kids. When is that time with your students? And if you don't have that built into your schedule, I think we can manually build it in. And if you're like, I don't even know what I would do if that was built into my schedule, or some of you have it built in your schedule now and you're like, it's a freaking free-for-all. I get it. I hear you. I do. I get it. But I also think that social emotional learning time is one of those things where it just creates a space of openness, of trust, and can create some really cool momentum as we move forward in this school year. If you're needing some ideas on that, you can go to monicagenta.com/180SEL. That's Monica, GENTA.com/180SEL, to kind of get an idea of what I do during my advisory time every single day. Also, I want to give one final last call for the Awesome Academy. If you haven't heard about this, this is a 4-course, fun, flexible, virtual PD. And this is literally the last call because it is started and it is already cooking up and it's going to be amazing. You can go to monicagenta.com/awesomeacademy or easier link, monicagenta.com/courses to get signed up. 60 hours worth of PD credits are available for the Awesome Academy. Tons of ideas, tons of motivation. It's going to help you create an amazing school year, but that is the last call. You can check out these links in the show notes, both monicagenta.com/awesomeacademy and monicagenta.com/180SEL, to find out more about resources like the ones I have in this episode. So friends, have the hard conversations, listen to your students, create a space where you can be heard as a staff and as a school family, and let's make sure that our voices are loud and proud so we can be proactive about the problems that might pop up this school year. I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode, but most importantly, thank you for living this teacher life.